So now you're back, this would be, oh, I've forgotten, this would be
1947,
48.
Yeah.
You're back on the main campus as a chemical engineering major.
That's right. So I started at on the main campus in State College, Pennsylvania, in the fall of 1948. And my chemistry courses there, my first chemistry course there was quantitative analysis. I don't even know how much this type of thing is taught anymore, but that is a very good experience for a person. I think it's very good discipline for the chemist, because I think that that's the way a lot of chemistry really evolved, by the kind of spirit that comes about in approaching problems in quantitative analysis. All of it was wet chemistry in those days, what we call wet chemistry. We didn't use any fancy instruments and so on. It was all either gravimetric or volumetric analysis, lots of titrations, a lot of use of the analytical balance, you become very, very familiar there with the quantitative aspects of chemistry. And as I said, since I was interested in things quantitative from my earliest memories as a grade school student, or even before grade school, quantitative analysis appealed to me. It was a lot of work. It was hard work. I remember the laboratory part of this. We had two full afternoon sessions a week, and that wasn't enough to do all the work you had to do in this course. We had an enormous number of unknowns to come through, and it was quite a tough course when I think about it. How much we had to take. So there was that course, and then I had a course in physics. I had first course in calculus, differential calculus that semester. I had a course in history. It was wasn't an elective course, but it was one of the courses that was required, to round out a student. I think I had a course in analytical mechanics, since chemical engineers were part of an engineering program as well as a chemistry program. We had a fair component of engineering, strictly engineering courses. And that was also been the year I was first exposed to a chemical engineering course. Industrial and engineering stoichiometry, where you get into the mass and energy balances, and which the chemical engineers, this is their bread and butter in their everyday lives. Now, one of the things that I liked very much about being a chemical engineering student at Penn State was that chemical engineering was a part of the chemistry department. It was not a part of the College of Engineering. This was to my liking, because by the time I was on the campus at Penn State, I knew that I liked chemistry a great deal. And as a matter of fact, I already was thinking, should I be a chemist rather than a chemical engineer? As it's turned out in the later years of my career, I've been more of a chemist than I've been as an engineer for a long time. But I was already thinking about it at the time I was a sophomore. I liked chemical engineering there because it was right in the chemistry department. So we took all the basic core chemistry courses that the chemistry majors took, and in addition to the engineering courses that you had to take. So I went through the same thing that a chemistry major would do for, say, organic chemistry, took the full component of courses, took the full component of physical chemistry courses. And this particularly was a real pleasure for me, physical chemistry, because again, this is quantitative aspects of chemical phenomena throughout. And we had four semesters of physical chemistry at Penn State. So it was probably as heavily loaded with physical chemistry as any chemistry program in the country at the undergraduate level. And we used an old book that I can remember. Students all grumbled about it, but it was an excellent book for you to Learn by Doing. That was a book by Noyes and Sherrill. It was a book called A Course of Study in Chemical Principles, went all the way back to around 1922, or 1920 maybe, and it's so old that Linus Pauling used this when he was a student at Caltech, when he was a graduate. It was still being used, and it was one of the few places in the country where they still used this book, because it was not a descriptive book. It was a book was problem-oriented. The whole book was a set of problems, and you worked your way into the derivation of chemical principles by working your way through a problem. This is the way you learn something about the various principles of chemistry, by actually working a problem. And they were very skillful in the way they set up the book, although some people thought it was a very difficult course, a difficult way to do it. I liked it. And so I was very pleased then. So by taking the chemical engineering curriculum at Penn State, I got just about everything I wanted. I got the mathematical component. I was introduced to physical chemistry. And I could see by the time I was through 4 semesters of physical chemistry, this is what I liked. And as a matter of fact, I thought seriously at the time about the possibility maybe going over into physical chemistry as a graduate student. But as it worked out, I didn't have to do that. I went to another school where chemical engineering was part of the chemistry department, and where I was able to develop a thesis which was heavily physical chemistry oriented, and so I got just about everything I wanted.
Was Frank Whitmore there at Penn State?
He died the first year that I was a student. As a matter of fact, he died in 1947, the year that I went to Lycoming. And so by the time I got on campus, he had already passed away. That was unfortunate, because he was a very outstanding figure in organic chemistry and a very prominent figure on the campus what was then Pennsylvania State College, today Pennsylvania State University.
What about Gilbert Pond? Was he there then?
No, I think that I remember Pond Laboratory, because that's where I took my physical chemistry laboratory courses. But Pond, he might even have been deceased by the time I was there. Talking about the setup at Penn State, the chemical engineering and chemistry were part of a school of chemistry and physics. And so there was a very close tie-in between all of these physical sciences and chemical engineering. And that was just exactly what appealed to me, what I really wanted. So as I said, I didn't have a real good idea when I was a senior in high school about what I wanted to do. I had some sort of a feel for the kind of activity that I would like to be involved in. And I think I made a very fortunate choice of chemical engineering without having a very good appreciation of what it really entailed, because I think I got just about everything that I'd hoped to get.
Who were some of the professors then in both chemistry and chemical engineering that you had?
Well, in chemical engineering, the department head was a man named Donald Kreider. He had been an MIT, a graduate student at MIT, and had taken his doctorate there, I suspect, back in the 20s or something. So he was part of that very famous group of people from MIT. There was another man named Arthur Rose, who later became involved in an entrepreneurial activity of his own there, known as the Applied Science Laboratories at Penn State. So he was a professor of chemical engineering and involved in this industrial activity, and several of Rose's students later became involved in that activity, and then went out on their own in another venture in that state college area. Another well-known chemical engineer was Michael Cannon. He was a man who was involved with the development of the so-called cannon packing for distillation columns. And he had a venture of his own going in State College, in addition to being a professor of chemical engineering. There was a cannon industries there that manufactured these cannon Fenske viscometers, and I think maybe the cannon packing for the distillation columns, and so on. And then there was Floyd Carnahan, who was very well known as a teacher of chemical engineering. Just about everybody who took the basic chemical engineering courses in fluid mechanics and heat transfer, unit operations, had Floyd Carnahan for their teachers. In chemistry, I remember some people very well. In physical chemistry, there was A. Wood Hutchison and Ralph Seward, two people I remember very well. I learned a great deal from both these people, and they both stimulated a strong interest in physical chemistry for me. In organic chemistry, there was a man named J. Harris Olawine, who was sort of a legend in Penn State. Not that everybody liked him all that much, but he was a legend from the standpoint of giving one real tough organic chemistry course to undergraduates. Yeah, I guess he got great joy out of making it as difficult as he possibly could. But he was an outstanding lecturer. His lectures were crystal clear, and you learned organic chemistry in a classical sense, I think, very, very well there.
Did you do any independent research as an undergraduate?
Not at the time, and the main problem with the chemical engineering curriculum in those days was just so loaded up, there was just no time for anything. There was so much laboratory work in the curriculum. Typically, the organic chemistry courses would have a couple of complete afternoons taken up with lab work. I already mentioned the quantitative analysis in that respect. Physical chemistry would have laboratories that probably at least once a week where you devoted a whole afternoon to that. Then in chemical engineering, they had these unit operations laboratories. There was a course in that were two times a week for half a day doing experiments in that laboratory. And then there were laboratories over in electrical engineering. We had to take electrical engineering courses. We had the laboratories. We had laboratories in metallurgy course that I had to take. I remember there was a laboratory courses in all the physics laboratory and all the physics courses, and it was an enormous. Enormously complete program, and as I said, you packed in all the chemistry that was part of the chemistry core, and in addition, all these extra engineering courses, and then on top of that, the cultural courses that we were asked to take in history, economics, business law. I remember taking a course in that, languages, German. So there just wasn't much time. Your week was pretty much taken up almost entirely in the class hours in those days. So the only time you had for study was in the evenings, and just wasn't much opportunity.
As you were approaching the end of your Penn State career, had you thought about, what were you thinking about for the future?
Well, when I started at Penn State, I didn't have any idea about going to graduate school. I didn't even have an appreciation of what was involved there or why anybody would go beyond, say, a four-year college course. But as I came close to the end of my college career at Penn State, I began thinking about possibly going to work in an industrial job, so I took some summer jobs. I can remember working with the Coppers Company in Pennsylvania. I did summer work with them. They had a facility in Kubota, Pennsylvania, which is out in the Pittsburgh area. And one summer I wound up working in a little town known as Petrolia, Pennsylvania, out near Butler in Katanning, Pennsylvania. It was an old coal tar products plant. And what I was doing there was pilot plant work. They happened to use this old coal tar products plant. They had some space there where they set up a pilot plant, and I spent a summer there doing pilot plant work and doing a lot of shift work, and got a feel for what working in the chemical industry was like. And it was my first exposure to development work, process development work, and it was a very good experience for me because of the aspect of responsibility for that type of an operation. It was an operation where you had to be aware of what you were doing at all times. Otherwise, you might run into some serious problems. We were handling such nasty things as sulfuric acid, sulfur trioxide, benzene, just about a lot of things that make anybody shudder today. And the pilot plant was fairly complex. I'm not going to get into too much detail here, because even though it was almost 45 years ago, I guess. I don't know what Coppers has ever done with this, but it involved a number of types of operations. There was a reactor, there was a crystallizer, there was a centrifuge, and so I became familiar in a very real way with some of the kinds of things that really go on in the chemical industry. It was a very valuable experience for me. Taught me a lot, and I learned through a few mistakes, as I'm sure everybody does, but it was a hazardous assignment, and sometimes I wonder, why did they ever trust this sort of thing to a young, to a student?
And did that experience reinforce your determination to stay in the chemical industry?
Yes, it was hard work, but it was a very valuable experience, and it was a positive experience for me. As I said, it was my first experience with the development part of R&D, and I became very conscious about. The way a chemical engineer has to think about problems in the chemical industry. You begin to appreciate what you mean by a material balance in a very real way, because you're making product and you're very much interested in how much you're recovering, and you become very conscious about how precisely you want to determine yields, because yields translate into dollars and so on. So that was a very valuable experience. And then after I've completed that summer, I went back to my senior year in chemical engineering at Penn State. And so it gave me a much better appreciation of at least the chemical engineering part of my senior year at Penn State, and a very valuable experience. But by that time, as I had indicated, I had been taken up with physical chemistry quite strongly. And I thought I might like to go to graduate school. I finally became aware of what graduate school was all about, that you had an opportunity to do a research problem and to delve in some depth into a research problem. I probably could have gone into a physical chemistry program in graduate schools almost anywhere, because I'd had the basic courses that would be required for that. But I decided to accept a graduate assistantship in chemical engineering at the University of Illinois. And the big reason I decided to do that was, once they had a real handsome assistantship for me, and the economic part of this was very important to me, because it turned out with the assistantship that I could get at Illinois in their chemical engineering department, that I could go all the way through on my own. I wouldn't have to depend on my parents for anything after that. When I went to, and one thing I like to tell people about my experience at Penn State as a student is what it cost me to go through 4 years at Penn State shortly after World War II. I think my whole college education cost me about $3,000 for everything. That's tuition, board room, books, fees, you name it. That was it. That was a real bargain. And so getting an assistantship at Illinois, which would pretty much cover everything that I would need in graduate school, just did it for me. Plus the fact that Illinois had the setup where you had this very strong chemistry department. In those days, it was chaired by Roger Adams, who was a very well-known figure in organic chemistry, probably as well-known a figure as there was in the whole world in organic chemistry. And chemical engineering was a part of this department. It was one division, just like physical chemistry, organic, analytical, or inorganic. When you started in Illinois, I remember my first day there. The first day reporting, they made you take exams. Before they would let you even take any courses, you had to pass their requirement in inorganic, organic, physical, and in my case, a couple of chemical engineering exams in addition. So that was from day one, and this was to determine whether you needed to have any makeup work before you got into the full program there at Illinois. But as I said, the closeness of chemistry and chemical engineering there was very important to me, and it gave me the opportunity to take courses in physical chemistry and mathematics. As a matter of fact, I took more courses in physical chemistry and mathematics than I did in chemical engineering, if you added the two of them up. And plus, I was able to do a thesis and work with an individual who was very much oriented toward physical chemistry and chemical physics. That was Harry Drickamer. And he was probably has had as an important effect on me as anybody that I've been involved with in my whole career.
In what way? What was?
Well, first of all, he was the one who really introduced me to research. I did my PhD thesis with Harry Drickamer. We had very similar interests. As I said, Harry Drickamer had been trained as a chemical engineer, had worked for a couple of years in the early 40s with the Pan American Refining Corporation in Texas City, Texas, I believe it was. And he was a superb engineer, made some very, very notable contributions in chemical engineering, some classical papers in the subject, but decided that's not what he wanted to do. And he decided that he would like to get involved with more of the physical science, in other words, chemistry or physics, something of that sort. And he took a position in teaching in chemical engineering at Illinois for the same reason that I took an assistantship there, namely that it was part of the chemistry department. And he already knew he wanted to work in an area like that. So he started as an assistant professor there in 1946, just after the war, about the same time I was starting at Penn State as an undergraduate, very close to the same time. And he developed a program which was very heavily physically, chemically oriented, and he shortly became a professor of physical chemistry as well as chemical engineering. So another appealing thing about Harry Drickamer's program at Illinois was that, as I said, he was a professor in both physical chemistry and chemical engineering, so he had a mixture of graduate students coming from chemical engineering and chemistry. And it wasn't very long after that, he started to have graduate students trickling over from the physics department. So it was a very early example of an interdisciplinary research program in a university where there were chemists, physicists, and engineers all involved in research problems, all doing similar kinds of research. And it had a very useful purpose for somebody like myself, who would later wind up in engineering, who would later wind up in industry, because it tended to emphasize research problems rather than disciplines. And it tended to develop a philosophy on the part of the student of concentrating on solving a research problem rather than worrying about it, whether it was strictly physical chemistry, organic, or physics, or engineering, or what have you. And then you learned what you had to learn to work the problem, which is about the best way I can, best kind of preparation I can think of for industrial research career.